All right. I think we're on our fourth episode of Journey to the Hoop, which is a series where I am interviewing various basketball folks about their journeys as basketball players growing up, where their basketball journey ended. Maybe for some it's still going. But today we have Logan Kosmalski, my ProSkills co-founder. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So Logan, I know your basketball journey pretty well for the most part, but I think there is some things I don't really know. But we're still gonna start from the beginning. We're gonna go through everything. So let's start with, where were you born and what was your childhood? Yeah. What did it look like?
I was born in Nashville, Tennessee in 1981. My dad was a former basketball player. He played at the University of Tennessee. He played in the NBA for years. He was drafted by the Kansas City Kings back when they were in Kansas City, like in 1974 or 76, I can't remember.
And your dad is how tall?
Now he's 6'11", but he played listed at 7 feet tall.
Tall
guy. That's where I got my height from. I'm 6'8", so. So my dad spent some time in the NBA with the Kansas City Kings, and he was on the roster with the Bulls for a year, but he got hurt, so he never really played. Spent 2 years playing in Rome and in like the north of France, and that was his.
And then he ended up back in Tennessee?
Yeah, then he ended up, going back to Tennessee, just kind of, I think he was having some knee problems, so he decided that he wasn't playing anymore. He just kind of started working. Went back to Tennessee and got a job because of his connections through the whole University of Tennessee. And my mom's parents were living in Nashville at the time, so they moved there to be around her parents.
And they met in college, correct?
My parents met at college at the University of Tennessee, yeah.
And so they were dating or married throughout his pro career?
Yep. My brother was – so I have an older brother who also played basketball, and he was I think he was about a month or 2 months away from being born in France when my dad was playing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, would have helped him in the international playing days that he had.
A visa / passport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, okay, so your dad had a relatively long professional career, and your mom rolled with him through it all.
Yep.
They ended up back in Tennessee. What was your dad doing? What did he do after his
I think he did a couple of things. I think he was, like, selling yearbook ads for a while, and I know he had one other job that I can't really remember what it was, but I mean, I know you know this, but he eventually got on with Nike in Tennessee. A friend of a friend was a manager with Nike, and my dad's interview consisted of one dinner where they kind of had some drinks and laughed, and all of a sudden, you know, I think it was like 1982 or 83.
So he worked for Nike before your mom, though?
Yep, he started with Nike. And then, I mean, that was how small Nike was back then, is my dad didn't even go through like a formal interview process. He just met this guy and was like, hey, I like you. You want to come?
Oh, that's cool.
We got an opening spot in our office in Dallas. Move to Dallas, and you can be a sales rep for Nike, back when it was in its infancy.
Okay, so well, let's go through your Tennessee years. How long did you live there for?
Oh man, I don't even remember living there. We moved
so
moved when I was like 2 years old and moved to a suburb of Dallas, Texas.
How much older is Landry than you?
He is 3.5 years. We're separated by 4 grades, so.
I didn't realize he was 3.5 years older than you. I mean, that's a good amount.
Yeah,
he must have really beat up on you.
Oh, he pounded me. The driveway basketball games were pretty intense with him and my dad. I was the youngest, always just kind of getting clobbered, getting pushed around.
Yeah, is that kind of your first memories, your first basketball memories, is playing in the driveway with your brother and your dad, or?
My first memories are watching my brother play. I mean, my first memories of like really being into it were watching him play when I was
–
he was probably in – you know, 6th or 7th grade,
like, and
I was in
league or a school
he would play like on a travel team, and I'd go with them on their trips out to West Texas, and they'd play in like tournaments. And I mean, he played in like a rec league, then he played like on all-star teams, and I would go watch him play. And I finally, he was getting serious about it, so I think I was, you know, in like second or third grade, so I kind of wanted to go along with what he was doing, and I'd get really serious watching his games and trying to emulate what he did and everything.
Yeah, that's funny. Talk more about your driveway pickup games, your battles with your brother. Was it always like, was your dad typically always out there involved with you guys, or was it mostly you and your brother out there shooting or playing one-on-one? What would you guys do?
Yeah, I mean, I would just go out there by myself and just shoot and play, but a lot of times when we played, it would be either my brother and I playing one-on-one, or I would try to tag along with my brother and his friends when they'd go out there and play, and we played 2-on-2 if they needed me. But it was a lot of just getting my butt kicked, and a lot of frustration, a lot of fights, a lot of going inside upset and angry, and a lot of losing.
I guess my question, knowing Landry now, you know, and was he, I mean, he's, I know he's a very competitive guy. Was he ultra competitive back then?
I say this, and I, you know, good or bad, my brother's the most competitive person I've ever met. Like, just, and he's always been that way. He's always been very serious, very focused, and just extremely competitive. He never really let me win.
Do you think that helped you? Because my good buddy, Alan Stein, and there's another guy who sometimes referenced, Gary Vee talks about that, is like, they will never let their kids win on purpose. This is different because he's your brother, mm-hmm. but like, do you think that helped you, like him not ever letting you win and just always?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because, I mean, like I said, he's so competitive that, I mean, he's much more naturally competitive than I am, but just playing with him, being around him, like, it upped my competitiveness level, and I never got to his level, but it made me that much more competitive than I was naturally.
So do you think competitiveness can be 100% learned, or just you're born naturally with some amount of competitiveness, but it can be learned up to a certain point, or what are your thoughts on that?
Nature versus nurture, the ultimate question. I don't know. I mean, I think when I look at my brother, he was just, it's natural for him. I think when I look at myself, I have a certain level of competitiveness, and I think I learned a little bit more, so I think I'm much more of a combination. I'm not sure what made my brother so competitive or if he learned it. I think it was natural. I don't know why. I don't know how. I'll go back to, like, definitely being around him and playing, just wanting to be a part of his games with his friends, wanting to beat him in the driveway, and the frustration of constantly losing to him.
Yeah, and I don't think I realized you were three. He was 3.5 years older than you. That's a good amount. I mean, that's like a third grader versus sixth grade. How many grades above you?
Four.
He was four above you?
Yeah. Oh, so, man. He's in seventh grade. I'm in third grade, and we're trying to play against each other.
That is a huge difference.
Yeah.
Wow.
We would always, my mom still talks. Sometimes we'd go play, like, just family games for fun out in the driveway. My mom was always the last pick.
Your mom is not very tall.
No. That's what's holding me back.
What is,
man.
She, my dad's 5'6"?
She's 5'6". Yeah.
5'6". Yeah. Well, I mean, normal height. But yeah. Yeah.
But
if she
were 5'11",
oh, yeah,
or 5'10", I think I'd be a 7-footer.
Yeah, that's 7-footer's a tough deal though for the rest of your life after you
finish
playing.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Interesting, man. Well, what what is your first memory of playing organized basketball, or where did it begin, or and where was where did competitive basketball start?
I remember playing when I was probably in like second or third grade, like a YMCA, you know, one of those leagues where girls played and boys played, and the coach would kind of be out on the court directing people around. And funny story, I was always a tall kid. I was, because my dad's so tall, I was always like head and shoulders above like all my classmates. I got confused for teachers sometimes, like in my school. But there, a video popped up in my high school graduation of me as like a second grader playing in one of these YMCA games, just towering over like all these kids, and these girls and these two girls like double teaming me and just like fouling me, like legitimately like grabbing me and holding me and me getting frustrated and pushing one of these girls down. And they showed it at a graduation party, and it was a little bit embarrassing. But I would say those YMCA, you know, co-ed, coach-led basketball games, like my first
Yeah, memory. What about, what is kind of your first AAU memory or competitive, like, club team memory?
So it was a little bit different where I grew up. We would take part in like a rec league that was kind of parent run, and then we, like, from that rec league, all star teams were chosen to kind of go on and travel. You know, I mean, not travel. We played against other club teams. We played against other all star teams, and we would, you know, culminate our season with a 2-hour trip down to, like, you know, South Texas for some.
So it's just like a little one game dribblers. Or a one tournament. Deal like at the end of the season, like an all star
no team? I mean, we would play in a couple of tournaments,
but it wasn't full-blown AAU.
No, it wasn't full-blown AAU. We weren't playing in tournaments every single weekend. It was called Little Dribblers all-star team that we'd play a few tournaments a month, and like I said, we go to the Little Dribblers national tournament, which is always somewhere, a small town in Texas, and compete in that. Those are my first memories of, like, really, I remember I wanted to make the All-Star team, and I remember making the All-Star team and being excited and then doing well there and really wanting to win and really feeling good about winning when we're on the All-Star team. So,
yeah. So what about school ball, middle school ball?
Yeah. I don't know if you know this. So in Texas, we had the junior high system, which was 7th, 8th, and 9th graders at one school.
You have told me this before. This is interesting, though.
Yeah. And
is it still that way?
I think it is. Yeah, I haven't been back in a long time. But so 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, my team, which was just, I mean, it was me and you know, 5 or 6 of my really close buddies who, I mean, basketball is what we did. We'd go to the neighborhood rec center on Saturdays and be there all day playing and getting in arguments and just shooting around and messing around and playing basketball. And it was cool because we were really close friends, and that's something that we really enjoyed doing together, and it made us closer. But we were also, like, I mean, 5 of us were just hyper competitive, and we wanted to play, we wanted to win, and we wanted to compete. So we did that in kind of like our elementary years, and then going into our junior high career, I think we were the only team in, like, our school's history, like 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, we didn't lose a game. We were, like, you know, as 7th graders, we played 15 games a season, and we didn't lose. And the next year, we probably played the same 15, 20 games in our, you know, 8th grade year, and we didn't lose. And then going on to, like, 9th grade, there was talk of me as a 9th grader being on a junior high campus of, you know, after school going up to the high school to play varsity as a freshman. But we kind of decided against that. I wanted to stay with my friends and finish out my junior high career. And, you know, we ended up going undefeated that year. So that's a really cool memory that we still, you know, still talk about, the only junior high team to go undefeated for 3 years.
Interesting. I have a couple questions surrounding that, and I'm going to ask all of them before I forget.
Yeah.
A, who were some of the other players on your team? And B, that's interesting that you decided to remain, I mean, essentially back and not move up and finish out with your buddies and your team. And that's kind of a scenario we get proposed to us all the time, or parents or players want advice on situations like that. So I guess, A, who were some of the other good players you played with? Did they end up going anywhere? And then B, talk about that decision to stay with your friends.
I don't think none of the names of my buddies growing up or any, like, I mean, I think one of my best friends, he went to try to play at, like, a NAIA school kind of around Dallas. One of the guys ended up playing football in high school. Another one ended up not playing basketball, and he's working for a consultancy living in Singapore, and another one's a chiropractor back in Dallas. So that was that moment in time when that was what binded us as friends. That was something we loved doing together, and we were good for 7th, 8th, and 9th graders. And, you know, luckily for me, I kept growing. Some of those other guys didn't, and, you know, the athletic ability and other things just kind of
drove
it apart. Yeah, I mean, it's just
the passion and the goals.
Some things happened, and, like, you know, all of a sudden one of them wasn't getting playing time and he wanted to focus on his studies, and one of them decided to play football, and that decision, I might have misspoke. Like, it wasn't really all on me. It was, like, the high school coach and my parents, and I was involved, And I look back upon it now, like, I mean, I don't know what I would advise kids to do if I was in that situation. But like the way that we looked at it was, you know, I was only in ninth grade. I was only 15. I had 3 more years of high school basketball to be really serious and really competitive. And that was a time, it was a really close group of friends, and we had done really well. And the logistics of getting me across town to the high school campus every day for practice, and you know, it wasn't an easy decision, but we just thought, like, you know, at the end of the day, this was the best thing for me to do.
Yeah, and I want to ask a question later on when we get there, but I know a similar scenario popped up dealing with AIU when you were in high school later on, the uh-huh. whole kind of option to stick with one team or go to another team.
Yeah.
And we can talk about that. But the first thing I want to bring up is, I know you played multiple sports. Can you
yes.
talk about the other sports you played and if you
yeah.
felt that helped your basketball skills?
I think, yeah, a lot of people might be surprised to know that. So the junior high system, when I was in Texas, and I dug, and I don't know if it's still this way, but if you wanted to play a sport, you had to be involved in athletics, which was a period of the day that, you know, and when you were in athletics, everybody took part in football. So we had, for my seventh grade class, we had 4 football teams made up of all the boys in athletics.
That's a lot of football teams.
Yeah. And everybody that signed up for athletics played football somewhere. And then when it was football season, everybody tried out for football, got put on a team. When it was basketball season, they had tryouts, and they formed 2 teams per grade. And if you didn't make a team, you kind of took part in off-season football training. And then when it was track season, they kind of assigned everybody to do a track thing. And if you weren't a track athlete, you did off-season football training. So that was, you know, Texas breeding their high school football players from a young age.
So you played football.
I did play football. And I was going to say, like, I think my point in saying that was that, you know, growing up, my parents were dead set on against me playing football. And I didn't particularly want to play football. People wanted, because I was big, people asked me to play in the peewee leagues and everything.
And to be clear, I just want, in case – people have never seen Logan, he's not only tall, but he's a stocky guy too, and like muscular guy. So like you would have been like an awesome tight end, I think.
Yeah, and well, I did play tight end and when I played in 7th, 8th, and 9th grade for my junior high team, and I didn't particularly like football, but I do think that it did help me within basketball. Like, it made me physical, not afraid of contact, and it developed like a certain level of toughness.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of a, I feel like we're placed in a bit of a weird situation with football. Like, growing up and all through my career and into now coaching, like, football players, like, I've always loved football players because they're willing mm-hmm. to get down and dirty and be
yeah.
physical and bang. And
you can't have fear. I mean, if you have fear on the football field, like, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah, but so. And so, like, now if it's like, hey, would you recommend a kid play football? With the whole concussion thing, mm-hmm. and like, I'm typically like, no, I'm not gonna let my son
yeah.
play football. And I don't know how you feel, but like, it gets it, but it does really help
yeah.
on the basketball court.
You know, I mean, I think when I don't know enough about football or peewee football or anything, but when I was playing, there weren't a lot of big hits. You know, I mean, kids weren't strong enough, powerful enough to really like lay a hit on somebody. I mean, the biggest situation was getting rolled over on and hurting your knee or ankle or you know, breaking an arm. But, you know, there wasn't a lot of like head-to-head contact. There wasn't, you know, kids weren't that coordinated, powerful enough to do that. So I don't know. You know, I'm kind of like with you. I don't, you know, is there harm? Will I let my son play football when he's in 7th and 8th grade? I don't really know. But I do feel like for me it did help develop like a level of toughness that
yeah
I'm kind of thankful for.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And then you were, man, when I met you at Davidson, I mean, you were a strong physical guy that
yeah.
I definitely didn't enjoy getting tangled with.
But I also fouled a lot. So.
Yeah, that's very true. What about, you played baseball too, didn't you?
Yeah, no, I was going to come back to that. Like, I distinctly remember being in the car when I was in 8th grade, and I was a big baseball player, and I really enjoyed baseball, and My all-star basketball team was going on. There was conflicts, and I remember that the schedule worked out where I had to miss a basketball tournament for a baseball tournament. And I really remember I was like, nope, this is not – I'm not missing basketball for baseball anymore. And
when was that?
I think I was in seventh or eighth grade. And now, I mean, so it was easy for me. It was like I knew, hey, if I feel that strongly, like I want to be playing basketball, I don't want to be playing baseball anymore. Like I just.
And I assume you quit football at some point. When was that?
I did. That was fun. That was after, it was the spring of like when I was in ninth grade. I just kind of, you know, it was. I was a rising 10th grader. So it was kind of like, hey, if you're going to go play football. And I was like, I'm not. And the coach, I got some pressure from the coaches and asked me what I was going to do. And I was making a big mistake by not playing football, and I should be playing football. And I knew what I wanted to do. So I stuck with my gut feeling and didn't play football anymore.
Yeah. Maybe that's where you built up your skill of basically being immune to peer pressure.
You think so?
Yes. You are like the best at just like not caring what anyone thinks.
No, see, like I do care, but I mean, I think I have a strong like conviction.
Maybe it's called
like
stubbornness or something.
I mean, maybe I'm stubborn, but you know, and I'm not. I mean, I'm not always right. But when I make a decision, like I've really thought about this, and I really feel like what I want to do is right.
Yeah.
Then I'll stick with it.
No, that's
and I knew I didn't want to play football.
That's a great skill, and for anyone out there that wants to listen to a good podcast surrounding that kind of topic about peer pressure and stuff, but also. As it relates to basketball is Malcolm Gladwell.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Revisionist History, and he did an episode with Rick Barry and underhand free throw and how Rick Barry's constantly trying to get guys to shoot underhand free throws, especially big guys like Wilt Chamberlain, Shaq, mm-hmm. and it's worked great Wilt Chamberlain shot underhand for like a whole season and shot like 80%. But he got so much pressure, he got made fun of so much that he went back to normal the next seasons and shot like in the 50s.
Percentage drop, yes. Yeah, I heard that one, yeah.
Scored so many more points, but it's amazing. So Malcolm Gladwell, Revisionist History, the episode surrounding Rick Barry. Big Man Can't Shoot.
Big Man Can't Shoot.
Go check that out, it's amazing.
It's a good one.
Well, let's jump forward, okay, into high school. Mm-hmm. I assume you made the varsity team all 3 years.
I did, yeah. I mean, going up, my brother had just gone through. My brother was an all-state player in Texas as well, so there was a lot of, you know, Landry's brother's coming up. He's going to play, and I remember feeling a good amount of pressure from that, wanting to live up to his expectations. And then, you know, by that time, I think entering my sophomore year, I was like 6'6" or 6'7", so I was pretty much full grown. And that was interesting going from a ninth grade of the freshman team to playing on the varsity and playing against, I mean, I distinctly remember one of my first games, I was, you know, I think I was still 15, and I was playing against this kid that was 18-year-old. He was a football player at this one of our crosstown schools, and he just absolutely pushed me around and
like a rag doll.
Oh, I mean, just physically dominated me. And I was so frustrated, and he was talking trash to me, and he was, you know, doing things when the ref wasn't looking, and he'd hit me, and it would hurt, and I was just so frustrated. But I think it was good. I mean, I had to adjust quickly if I wanted to be as good as I thought I wanted to be. And so, I mean, I don't really remember a whole lot about my sophomore year, my junior year versus my senior year. I just remember kind of a gradual progression. I felt more and more comfortable. I had some setbacks. I had some bad games. And I just tried to, you know, keep working on my game and become the best player I could.
And meanwhile, Landry committed to go to Davidson and then went to Davidson and was playing there, and I believe he was freshman of the year, right? So
he was freshman of the year in the conference, in the Southern Conference, when he was freshman at Davidson.
So he was having a lot of success in college. Mm-hmm. Where else did he get scholarship offers to, by the way?
He was really heavily recruited by like Ivy League schools, which I mean, I think for in his mind he felt like he was deserving of a scholarship, and I think Davidson and there was one other school that offered him a scholarship, and or it was like an Ivy League school where he'd have to pay a little bit, and
plus, like, I mean, the Ivy Leagues now have done an unbelievable job getting, you know, raising the bar mm-hmm. of their basketball, but you know, back then
it was different.
A little bit different. I mean, you had Pete Carril and the Princeton offense, but Harvard was not good. Mm-hmm. Yale, I don't think, was good. I mean, it was really, I think, just Princeton. I mean, I might be making that up, but I know it wasn't nearly as good as, like, I mean, Harvard's dang near top 25 every year. Yale's really good. Princeton's good.
And it was different back then. And I mean, and Davidson was different back then. I mean, it was, they really hadn't established their culture of success that they might have now. And I think my brother and his class were some of the first ones that they went to the first NCAA tournament under Coach McKillop at Davidson. And they kind of started a winning tradition where that consistently Davidson was one of the top teams in the Southern Conference. And yeah, I mean, it was cool. Like, as soon as they had never heard of Davidson, never, you know, heard of Coach McKillop, never been to North Carolina, and they came out here and just kind of fell in love with it. And big fans. My brother spent 4 years and had a really good career at Davidson, and
yeah,
cool. Was better for it.
Yeah. Well, back to kind of your journey in high school. So while that was going on at Davidson, you were back in Texas going through high school. Who were some of the, I mean, Dallas has unbelievable, and Texas has unbelievable players. Who were some of the players in your area that you remember playing against?
My big rival sort of played for Duncanville High School is a guy named Brian Boddicker, who was ended up going to the University of Texas, and he was really highly recruited, highly ranked.
McDonald's
All American, yeah, really. And it made it even harder too, as we were both the same size, both very similar like skill sets, but he was more athletic and he was stronger and he was a little bit more skilled than I was, and he just a really confident dude, you know, borderline. But I've since met him since. He's a really good guy. I've met him since. But he was really like my crosstown rival. There's a guy down in Houston named Alton Ford who ended up playing in college. Who ended up doing the best was a guy who just kind of came out of nowhere. My junior, senior year named Andre Emmett ended up playing at Texas Tech.
And I think against him at Davidson.
Yeah, I think he played.
He was a monster.
Yeah, I think he got a few seasons in the NBA under his belt. Just crazy athletic and really
long, strong,
and so I mean that's really the all that really comes to mind now. Back in those were like the big names in Texas when I was growing up.
Yeah. Well, let's jump over to the AAU side because I know I said I'd come back to this. What can you set up kind of the scenario you went through between, you know, playing? I believe the scenario was playing on an AAU team with your buddies and a father coach to moving to a more like serious, a little bit more cutthroat maybe AAU team.
That happened. It was that exact same situation where, you know, I had played with my buddies in those all-star teams, and we ended up forming, you know, I think my dad coached or they got a coach, and we did it, you know, through like seventh or eighth grade. And it became a point where I started getting recruited by like a bigger team based out of Dallas who had a really good coach. They had some really good players, and that was a really difficult time for me because, I mean, I think I was 15, about to be 16. So I was going into my sophomore year. It was after my freshman year of high school, and I had, you know, I cherished the time with my friends, but I also knew, like, I'm going in high school, it's starting to get, like, a little bit more serious. So I needed to start playing against better competition, start playing, with some better players on my team. And it was just the time for me to break away from, like, the dad-coached friend basketball. And it was really tough. I disappointed a lot of my friends, and there were some ill feelings between my parents and some of the other parents of taking me to play over here. But at that time I felt like that was just I wanted to take the seriousness of my basketball career kind of up a little bit. And
it was a sacrifice you made.
Yeah, it's true.
We've talked about on a previous.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, it's sort of a sacrifice for the purposes of taking your game to the next level / college recruitment, that sort of stuff, which was actually our exact subject on that Pick and Pop series podcast.
But then after,
you feel good about it, you know, like you don't regret it or anything like that, or
I feel good about it, and I think, I mean, my friends, like, they were disappointed, but I think they understood. You know, I was on a different path for them, and I think they knew at that time, like, you know, I was 6'8", and I was in high school, and I was getting like media attention in my area, and I was getting ranked in the state, and I think they knew that it was time for me to kind of break away and go play at a different sort of level of competition. So, I mean, yeah, it was, I mean, I don't regret it at all. I do miss the times that I had with my friends, and sometimes I wonder if like it was a year too early. It shouldn't have been that serious as like a 15-year-old. But then, you know, it all worked out.
Yeah. Interesting. So, well, we'll talk about. I mean, so you were a big guy. You were a skilled player. I know you could run. You know, talk about your college recruitment. Who was interested in you? Who recruited you? And specifically, I want to have you relay the story about the one about getting recruited because you ran the court.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was always, my mom takes credit for that too. She was, before every game, she would tell me to play hard and run the court.
My mom used to say, play tough, play hard.
Yeah. So, no, so, I mean, I think I started getting recruiting letters like my sophomore or junior year of high school, and it was nothing big, but, you know, the main time came, of course, you know, after my junior year when I was going to be a senior, and I, you know, my team, we came out to North Carolina to play in the Bob Gibbons thing, and that used to be in the, you know, the Raleigh-Durham area. We went out to Las Vegas. We went out to Los Angeles to play. So I had since joined like a bigger team in Dallas that, you know, did this every year. It was the same team my brother played for.
Who was it?
It was called the Fort Worth Lions. I'm not sure that they're actually still around. It was just
Darren Williams played for them.
Yeah, Darren Williams played for a couple of years after I left, and it was one of those teams where everybody ended up going to play somewhere, and we were good. We were competitive, and we were you know, a smart team with good guys on it.
But you had some other high-level players on there.
Yeah, some really high-level players. I mean, when I say really, like a couple of guys went to play for TCU. Yeah. One guy went to play for Drake. I went to, you know, we had another guy that went with me to Baylor when I ended up going to Baylor at first. So, yeah, we had a good team, and we played against Gerald Wallace, I remember, in Las Vegas. We played against Deshaun Stevenson in Las Vegas. I mean, I know those are older names.
But. Yeah, no, those are awesome names, actually. Yeah. I remember playing against Deshaun Stevenson, and he was just a man. He was just a man amongst boys.
Oh, but, he dunked on us so hard.
Yeah, and same with Gerald Wallace, man. But I specifically have heard you mention multiple times that, like, on your AAU team, you maybe averaged 4 points or 6 points. You got a bunch of rebounds, but you played really hard, but you seem to believe that coaches, and I think they actually told you this, they loved how hard you ran the court, and that's the main reason why they recruited you.
Yeah, you know, my dad being a former player gave me some really good advice, and I think he knew, you know, with my size that coaches would look at me, and he was, you know, he really helped me focus on things that would help the team win, that like good coaches would notice. Like I loved setting screens. I loved fighting for rebounds, and, you know, I didn't always get the shot, like the number of shots that I wanted, but, you know, my dad, he would tell me, he's like, you know, you're going to shoot free throws. You'll get an open jump shot or two per game, like, and coaches will see that you can shoot. You don't have to shoot 20 times a game to prove that you can shoot.
Yeah, because that's a big misconception from parents, especially, and coaches even, and players for sure, that you need to average 20 plus points a game to get a Division I college scholarship. And
I had games where I scored, you know, 20, 25 in AAU, but I also had games where I scored 6 or 7 and I got rebounds and I set screens. But you're right about like the running. I really took pride in like running the court hard every time. I mean, it allowed me to get easy buckets, allowed my team to score 2 points. And I remember coaches that did end up recruiting me, they were always like, man, you're physical and you really run the court hard. And I think that's something that when you ask kids, I mean, if you ask a kid to list his top 10 basketball skills, do you think anybody would list running the court?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So it was always something that I took pride in. You know, I realized like, hey, nobody else out here is doing this. And these coaches are telling me how they really like it. And I enjoyed it. It got me easy buckets. And it really served me well being able to run the court hard.
So who offered you scholarships and why did you end up choosing Baylor?
When I came down to it, strangely enough, Ben Howland, when he was at Pittsburgh, offered me a scholarship.
You got offered from Pitt, huh?
Yeah.
So was it only Pitt and Baylor were your only kind of big time offers, and then you had a bunch of kind of mid major ones?
SMU. I mean, they offered me a scholarship. You could argue they were mid major.
They weren't as good as have been lately, right?
No, they weren't. But I mean, they were still like a good program that traveled the country and played in a respectable conference. I would say that they were a mid major, like upper mid major mm-hmm. team at that time. Mm-hmm. Then like some West Coast. So I had a really good tournament out in Los Angeles, and I got started getting recruited by, the University of San Diego and Santa Clara and
St. Mary's.
I remember getting some letters from. I don't think they ever offered me a scholarship, mm-hmm. but I remember I had Dick Davey from Santa Clara, who was a really good coach, who came to my house to visit, and I know the University of San Diego offered me a scholarship, so. Those were like the ones that I was really interested in. And then, Davidson was in the mix and Baylor and Pitt. And, by that time I had kind of weeded out some other schools, but,
why did you end up choosing Baylor, or who were your final two? Do you remember?
Good question. I think it was those five. And I don't remember. I remember feeling, when it came down to it, Baylor was in the Big 12. It was close to home. It was a new coach that,
Dave Bliss,
yeah, that, felt like, hey, maybe it just had a sense that the program was changing. And my teammate from my AAU team was going there, and he called me and said, like, hey, I'm going. How cool would it be if we played together? I think I was, and I've since written about it in some blogs, but I was sort of blinded by the Big 12 and playing at the biggest possible school that I could play at.
Yeah, you know what? We're not going to get into the reasons why. We're going to tell people if they want to read about the reasons why, they can go read your blog. I think it's called Bigger Versus Better. It's on our website blog. It's really good. A lot of fans of that out there. Mm-hmm. so you can read about it there. So you went to Baylor, and let's talk about like your freshman year. How was your freshman year experience?
I actually started as a freshman at Baylor, and I think all things considered, I had a pretty good freshman year. The team, we started out, pre-conference, we started out 11-0. I mean, we weren't playing against top level teams, but we still won games, and then, took our licks when we got into the Big 12. That was an adjustment. I mean, again, it's just kind of the trend repeating itself of I did really well, then all of a sudden you're at another level and you're like getting pushed around and getting beat up on.
Especially the Big 12.
Playing against some grown men in the Big 12 as a 18-year-old playing against, some 21, 22-year-olds, that's a big difference. Yeah. So my time at Baylor was interesting. It was, I met a lot of great people, but then, After a pretty good freshman year, I kind of got recruited over, and my playing time drastically diminished as a sophomore. Brought in a really good Coach Bliss, brought in a really good player from Houston named Lawrence Roberts, who ended up being drafted and playing in the NBA for a few years and had a really good career over in Europe. And I remember I really didn't handle that well.
Well, we had a podcast on playing time frustration as well. It's funny,
and that's where that comes from.
Is that one of those experiences where you mentioned you look back on it and you're a bit embarrassed or at least you just wish you would have handled it differently.
I wish I would have handled it differently. And I at that time I was blaming everybody except for myself. Looking back at it. Lawrence Roberts was 6'9", and he was an incredible athlete who played in the NBA. Like, he probably should have taken my playing time, And the coaches at Baylor, like, they're under a lot of pressure to win. And, I think I did some things better than Lawrence, but Lawrence allowed Baylor to compete on the Big 12, like, in a different, like, sort of athletic level. So, I was just really – I was angry, I was frustrated, and I was, mad that my playing time had gone down, and that sort of got me on the train of like, what happens next year? What happens the year after that? And after a lot of a difficult season my sophomore year, I decided I was going to transfer.
Yeah, and what What did that look like? What schools did you decide to look at?
I sort of heard from the same schools that had been recruiting me out of high school. Out of high school, I didn't want to do what my brother had done by going to Davidson. I wanted to go somewhere bigger, and I thought Baylor was it. And then, you know, Baylor kind of opened my eyes to giving some smaller schools a look. And, you know, we had a relationship with the Davidson coaching staff, and, you know, they reached out, and I came out to Davidson to visit. And, you know, a big part of my transferring from Baylor was the playing time issues, of course, but another big part was the culture of the program at Baylor wasn't really, you know, it wasn't really a fit for me. And so I decided to, go out to Davidson and really open my eyes with the culture, the team, the locker room atmosphere was kind of something that I had really missed at Baylor that I wanted to be part of at Davidson.
Yeah, interesting. And all right, so you transferred into Davidson. You had to sit out. You had to do a redshirt year.
Mm-hmm.
That's when me and you first meet, because that's my freshman year coming in after doing a grade 13 / postgraduate year.
Yep.
How was that redshirt year sitting out for you?
I think it was just when I needed, to be honest. I think I needed, you know, time away to sort of remotivate myself, and sitting and watching games sometimes was hard, sometimes it was enjoyable, but I mean, for the most part, like I'd played basketball like so seriously for so long that I kind of needed a recharge. I needed the game to be taken away for me in order to be like, okay, now I understand why I was so motivated to play, sort of. So that was good. I mean, it was a long season. It was, you know, being on the practice squad's not the easiest thing in the world. But it was good. I mean it made it tough coming back after a year of not playing live action full speed games. So even coming back my junior year at Davidson after sitting out, was I sort of had to like readjust to like the speed of the game and everything.
Yeah. But you had a good career. You were all conference and set, you know, well, I think you set some single season records since you were there.
I think
there.
I still hold the record for number of fouls in the season.
Yeah, man.
The Texas football comeback served me well.
Yeah. No, but we had some good times and some good seasons. Specifically, my junior year, your senior year, we went undefeated in conference, 16-0 in the Southern Conference, and we're right on the verge of getting ranked top 25 in the country, and went into the conference tournament and blew it and lost in the semis. That was really
difficult
for us.
Still painful.
Yeah. and then you, I'm going to gloss over Davidson a little bit, by the way, because I don't want this podcast to be about Davidson all the time.
Yeah.
We both had a great experience and enjoyed it. So, you ended up going to France to play professionally, after Davidson.
Yeah.
How'd that decision come about, or how'd that opportunity come about?
You know, my brother had played professionally over in Europe, and I kind of knew, you know, I mean, as a college player, you get a sense of like, okay, am I destined for the NBA, or am I, you know, is an international career more in line with, you know, me? So, you know, I wanted to try to get into Portsmouth after I was done. I wanted to try to get on a summer league team. That stuff didn't happen. So, you know, I wanted to kind of go over and see the world and make some money playing basketball around Europe. And a former teammate of my brother's actually was still over in France, and I sent him a tape, and it just, you know, the scouting for the European teams wasn't, the coach saw my tape and offered me a contract like right then.
Who was the teammate?
Fern Tanella.
Oh
yeah, he had played in so he had been playing in France, and his coach was got hired for a new team in a hired league, and that's how that worked out. So, I mean, just not knowing anything, I just packed my bags and headed to France. And
yeah, although you were better off than most with Landry having played overseas, because I mean, even just a general 30-minute talk about what's it like over there, what's the basketball like, what's the culture like.
Oh, that's a huge. I mean, I still tell that's a huge advantage, and that's something that, you know, I hope with through Pro Skills someday we can offer guidance to guys that are making that leap from college to going overseas, because it's not, it just becomes so much more about just basketball. You know, it's how do you adjust to life off the court in a place where you don't speak the language, when there's customs that you don't understand, that you don't necessarily aren't comfortable with. But having my brother kind of explain that stuff to me very gently helped me prepare going over there kind of just expecting anything. And, you know, he gave me some tips for, you know, life off the court as well as like on the court, because, you know, after when you're going from college, you're going to play professionally, it becomes much more of a different game, a different motivation. You know, he said like, hey, you just need to know that you're going over, you're playing against grown men who are trying to get contracts to feed their families. And it's a different level of competition, a different level of, you know, competitiveness. That
yeah, I say this sometimes, when you add money into the mix by paying players, and we're not going to get into this whole subject today, mm-hmm. it just becomes a bit different. It takes the purity out a little bit. Like, I know there's a lot of money in college basketball, but currently players aren't getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that game is still so...
aren't getting paid. I'm not sure that's true.
Yeah. I know. I was gonna say that, and I guess I don't know if you can say it's so pure, but
it's different.
Yeah, it's just much different once players start getting paid, which I don't think many people are taking into account. When I am an advocate for the NCAA paying players what they're worth, but I don't think even myself are fully taking into account just that. Doing that right there, how it's going to change the game, because it's something I can't exactly put my finger on, but once you start paying
players, it's different. I think it
changes it a little bit.
I think you have to experience it a little bit to understand. I mean, it's just money just changes the game a little bit.
Yeah. Well, okay, so how'd your first season go over there?
First season was good. I mean, we had some success, and I adjusted well to life off the court. I found ways to stay busy and you know, outside of practices and games. And
you were in Nantes, France.
Yeah,
how far away from Paris? 2 hours on the fast train.
Yeah, it was like an hour and a half, 2 hours from the fast train. But it was not many people know about it in America. But it's a great city. I think it's, you know, the third or fourth largest. Sorry, did you hear that?
Yes.
the third or fourth largest. My dog's taking a nap here.
That was Nelson. Yeah. If anyone heard that, Nelson is the office dog.
Yeah. So Nantes is like I think it's like the third, fourth, or fifth like largest city in France. So it's a big city that, likes sports and had a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff to do. So really opened my eyes when I got there, and I was 23 and single and making money playing basketball, and I met some really good friends and just had a really good time my first year, and then you joined me for the second year. And
What about on the court? How was that?
That was, the start was a little bit rocky. I remember after, I think we had two what they call friendly games, pretty much like scrimmages. And I played okay, but there was talk of like, hey, you might be getting fired. so that was a really quick lesson on like, okay, this is what professional basketball is like. And, you know, I was fortunate, but I had some good games after that. I ended up having a really good, you know, year. My first year was just the Pro B level of France. So it was like the second level. Still very competitive basketball, but only two Americans per team. So the other American and I, you know, we had some really good games, and we won some games that people didn't expect us to win.
Shout out Flinder Boyd, by the way.
Yeah, Flinder, my buddy.
Yeah, great, great writer. If you guys want to check out some cool articles online, he's written some big time stuff for some pretty big time magazines and things like that. Flinder Boyd, Flinder. Boyd, is that correct?
Yeah.
Check him out. Google him. Really good articles.
So he and I became pretty close, and we still keep in touch now. But it was a really good, I wish we were, we just like, I think there were 16 teams in the league, and I think the top six or eight made the playoffs, and we were like one game away, and we just missed it. So, but we kind of beat expectations because we weren't a big club, and people didn't expect us to. The goal for that year was just to stay in the league and not get relegated to the lower league. So Everybody was happy with what we did and surprised by what we did because our budget was so small. But
But you played well enough, and they re-signed you for the second year, right? And then funny kind of story is the highlight or the game film you sent to Nantes was against Duke from your senior year, my junior year. Both of us had really good games. We played Duke really close. I think we lost by 8 or something like that, but it was a pretty close game. And I think you had 25, I had 24, and that was the game they had looked at.
Yeah, the game I sent them was that Duke game when you played well. So,
they knew about me, and then I signed with them for my first year out. Your second year, it was a relatively easy decision for me because I had gone and visited you and was looking forward to playing with you again over there. And France was enjoyable. The city was nice. So I signed over there and we played. We had a bit of a rough season, but we're going to skip over that because this is about you. And we've already talked about Nantes for 1 year. Uh-huh. So after your second year, then what happened? Where'd you go?
I wanted to go to a bigger club, and my family had some ancestry in Poland, so my agent and I were working on going over to Poland and trying to get a Polish passport, which would in turn allow me to play as a European player and give me a better chances of getting a better, higher paying job. So I went to a really small town in Poland called Wałbrzych. It's right on the border of the Czech Republic, and that was an eye-opener. Roll into that town, it was took a long time to get there, and it was, it was an old, really poor city. And, I was there for 2 or 3 months before I tore my ACL and had to head home.
Yeah, and how was that, tearing your ACL and dealing with that whole injury?
That was rough. I mean, I at that point, I played, and I was like, man, I don't know. This might be it for me, and that was kind of hard to accept, but It was really cool to see how people reached out. I mean, I ended up coming back to America and getting my ACL redone, and then as luck would have it, I hopped on the Davidson Radio Network the year that Steph Curry kind of exploded onto the national scene. So while I was rehabbing from my injury, I was also doing the radio for Davidson, and I got to travel with the team, and I got to announced the games on the radio for their Sweet 16
Elite Run. You guys interviewed LeBron, didn't you?
Interviewed LeBron James in Detroit during the Kansas game of when Steph led the team to the Elite Eight. So, it was another year away from basketball, but kind of showed me a different side of the the media coverage. And I spent a lot of time with the Davidson coaches, kind of studying what they did. And
Negative into a positive sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it
made the best of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure it could have gone any better when it comes to tearing your ACL and being out.
So I guess that year, then I went on to go play in Germany and played that year in Germany, and we almost had the reverse situation happen where I re-signed with my German team, and then you. In turn, I think I gave them highlights, or our agent reached out or whatever it was, and then they wanted to sign you.
Yeah.
So then you signed to come to Dusseldorf.
Yep.
And we played together again. That actually, we won't get into the basketball side, but obviously Germany is another great country, and I think we had a good time. But the one thing I do want to bring up is you ended up meeting your lovely now wife over
my
there.
My wife sitting right over here. She's met her in Dusseldorf, and I met her at the very end of my first year because I signed a 2-year deal, and so I was about to go home, and met her the night before I left for that summer break, and then went back, and we started dating my second year, and here we are.
We are
5-6 years later.
No, I think it's more than that,
isn't
it?
Know that. Don't tell me.
Yeah,
I do want to bring up I think it's important. I did end up getting fired in Germany.
The second year.
Yeah, the second year. We had, I think, another kind of a rough start. The first year was good. The second year was a little bit of a rough season, and ended up getting let go. And I always tell kids now that at some point in your basketball career, somebody's going to come along and tell you that you're not good enough to continue. And at that point, that was, you know, that was me, and it was hard for me to take, but it was also kind of like, you know, it happens to everybody, so I had to do my best to try and move on. And to be honest, like at that point, I was still dealing with knee injuries, and I kind of thought, you know, I was 29 at that time, and I kind of thought.
Did you end up having two ACLs?
Or no, not two ACLs. I had another scope done.
Yeah, you always had kind of. You still have a bit of knee issues,
a little bit, but I mean, it's getting better. But you know, at that time, I was still. My knee was just kind of up and down. I would feel great sometimes, and I would feel bad sometimes. And I didn't have a good year my second year in Germany, and I ended up getting fired. And it was kind of like.
Well, then you went to Sweden, right?
Yeah, then I went to Sweden the next year, and that's when I kind of knew. I got to Sweden, and I was just like, you know, my heart just wasn't in it anymore. I'd been away from my family, kind of living out of suitcases and dealing with injuries, and I just knew, you know, it was kind of like another point. Like my Swedish team wanted me to continue, and I was kind of like, no, I know I'm done, and I know it's time for me to move on. But I think it's important to know that, like, you know, I grew up. I had a really good junior high school. I had some ups and downs in colleges, but like, so I still, at the end of the day, I got fired as a professional player in Germany. So I understand when kids get cut or when kids don't get playing time, it's a difficult thing to deal with, but at the end of the day, it happens to everybody at some point, you know? Yeah. So it's just the nature of a competitive athletics.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention this, our first year in Germany together, that's when we started Pro Skills. We started it up, you know, we formed like an LLC real quick and decided to do a summer camp. And that, just interesting note for any listeners, is that's where it started. And we did a summer camp like every summer for the next, I guess, I don't know, three summers, and kind of built it up.
And let's talk about our first summer camp. Remember how many players we got?
Yeah, like 10, 12.
No, we got zero. Zero. We had to cancel it our first year.
Did we?
Yeah. We thought, like, hey, let's just have a camp, and we're two former Davidson guys. We'll do it at the school down the street, and we'll get kids to sign up. We got zero kids to sign up.
I thought you ended up doing it.
No, the next year we did. The next year I did a camp. The very first Pro Skills camp was me and 10 kids for 3 hours a day in the summer, and that was it. So, again, we've experienced failure, so we know.
Maybe that's how many times I've just failed, is that like I'll just wipe it out of my memory and don't even think about it.
But
you know, a lot of people think, hey, I'm just going to start up a youth basketball organization or a summer camp. It's like we try to tell people, like, it's not that easy. You know, like, we've put a lot of like sweat and probably some tears into this thing, man,
and we've experienced failure.
And we still do. I mean, when we try some new things, they don't always go as planned. But I mean, I think looking back on our basketball careers, I mean, we dealt with it growing up. We still deal with it today. But basketball has taught us how to, I think, for the most part, deal with those failures.
No, for sure. And that's, you know, I look back at my basketball, I'm thankful for, you know, teaching me how to deal with adversity, the ups and downs of, you know, playing poorly in high school, to losing playing time at Baylor, to, you know, being fired in Germany, to being injured and having to come back from that. So dealing with those things and continuing to press forward. And then also, like, the relationships I made. I mean, like, met you and started a business with you. I still keep in touch with guys that I played with overseas, and my best friends are the ones that I shared basketball with. So.
Yeah. Last question. Let's end on, you know, a Pro Skills question. Just talk about Pro Skills in general and what you're up to these days and what, you know, why do you wake up every day?
Yeah. You know, when we started Pro Skills and we decided we were going to start with teams, you know, we made, our vision was to change the culture of youth basketball. And that's something that, you know, I think about every day. And, you know, when we started in Charlotte and you and I were around all the time, we were like, this is really good. Like, we could see that we were having an effect on Charlotte. But then the other side came and said, like, man, we found something really special. Why would we want to limit it to just these kids in Charlotte? And how can we instill this culture into other people that can have the same impact here in Charlotte and allow us to affect more kids in different areas? So that's what we've been working on, is trying to find really good guys, trying to instill them with the culture, trying to put them in positions where they can have the same impact on kids in their area that we had on kids here in Charlotte. So you know, from a business standpoint, trying to get them set up and make sure everything runs smoothly so that our customers get, you know, have a good experience. Trying to get these guys put in places where they can, you know, they can manage coaches and they can manage, you know, the quality of what they're putting out and pro skills in their area. And, you know, training them on their on our culture and how we do things and why we do them the way that we do them so that, you know, we can bring that vision of changing the culture of youth basketball to life.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. We will end it there, but I always have one last question is, and it's kind of, it's a bit ironic because I know the answer, but where can people find you on social media?
They can find my blank Instagram account.
Yeah.
Shoot, I don't even know. L Kosmowski, I think.
Maybe your avatar picture on Twitter.
I do have an avatar picture on, let me see if I can find it right here.
I think everyone should
just go. L Kosmowski 35. I haven't posted a single photo to Instagram.
Oh, there you go.
But I after our talk the other day, I'm gonna start posting some pictures.
Yeah. At least some pro skills pictures.
Yeah, I can post those.
Or Nelson pictures, that's fine.
Yeah, my dog might
get some pictures of Sabrina. No selfies or anything like that.
No, I'm not the selfie kind
of
guy.
Well, you're having a baby soon. You can post some pictures of the baby, maybe.
And that might be my first.
Everyone likes that.
Yeah.
It could be your first and only. All right, man. Well, I appreciate that. That was awesome.
Yeah,
I even learned some things, and awesome to hear about your journey.
Yeah, thanks, man.